Ever feel like your mind is plotting against you? Like it's keeping a running list of everything that could go wrong? From the mildly embarrassing to the catastrophically unlikely. You're not alone. In Hardcore Self-Help, Fuck Anxiety, psychologist Robert Duff cuts through the therapeutic jargon to deliver what anxious people really need. Practical strategies explained in plain, often profane language. Since its publication, this refreshingly honest guide has become something of a cult classic among anxiety sufferers who appreciate Duff's no-nonsense approach. Unlike traditional self-help books that dance around difficult topics with flowery language, Duff's work speaks directly to readers in their darkest moments, offering both validation and actionable advice. The book has gained particular traction among millennials and Gen Z readers who appreciate its authentic voice and has been praised by celebrities like Sarah Silverman, who has openly discussed her own struggles with anxiety. What makes this book stand out in the crowded self-help marketplace isn't just its colorful language, it's the way it transforms complex psychological concepts into accessible tools without dumbing them down. Anxiety isn't some modern invention. It's hardwired into our DNA for good reason. Imagine you're a prehistoric human returning to your cave to find fresh lion tracks leading inside. Your heart pounds, your vision sharpens, blood rushes to your muscles, and your entire body prepares to either fight that predator or run like hell. That's your sympathetic nervous system doing exactly what it evolved to do, keep you alive. The problem? This same system activates when your boss calls you into their office unexpectedly or when you're about to give a presentation. Your body can't distinguish between a hungry lion and a PowerPoint presentation. Both register as threats. The physiological response is identical: racing heart, shallow breathing, sweating, and that unmistakable feeling of impending doom. Not all anxiety is problematic, though. That flutter of nervousness before a job interview can actually sharpen your focus and improve performance. Anxiety only becomes a disorder when it appears without clear triggers, causes extreme discomfort, or prevents you from functioning in daily life. If you're turning down promotions because they involve public speaking or avoiding dating entirely because meeting new people feels unbearable, your anxiety has crossed into problematic territory. What makes anxiety particularly insidious is how it feeds on itself. You feel anxious, then become anxious about feeling anxious, creating a spiral that's hard to escape. Think about panic attacks. They often begin with noticing a racing heartbeat, which triggers worry about having a heart attack, which makes your heart race faster, creating a feedback loop of escalating panic. The good news? Understanding this mechanism is the first step toward dismantling it. Your body isn't betraying you. It's just running an outdated operating system designed for a world full of predators rather than performance reviews. Once you recognize that these physical sensations are just your body's misguided attempt to protect you, they begin to lose some of their power. Your anxiety isn't a sign of weakness or character flaw. It's just your prehistoric brain trying to navigate a modern world it wasn't designed for. At the heart of anxiety lies what therapists call the cognitive triangle, the powerful connection between your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors. This isn't just theoretical psychology. It's the engine that drives your everyday experience. Consider this. If I asked you to vividly imagine someone you love being in a terrible car accident, you'd immediately feel distressed. If I then asked you to imagine finding $1 million in cash, your emotional state would transform completely. Nothing in your external reality changed, just the thoughts in your head. This demonstrates how powerfully thoughts influence feelings. These feelings then drive behaviors. If you believe that party will be full of judgmental people, you'll feel anxious and likely decline the invitation. If you believe it'll be full of potential new friends, you'll feel excited and probably attend. Same party, different thoughts, completely different outcomes. What complicates this process are cognitive distortions, those unhelpful thinking patterns that skew reality. We all have them, but people with anxiety tend to get stuck in these patterns more frequently. Let's examine some common ones. Filtering occurs when you magnify negative details while filtering out all positive aspects. You receive 10 compliments and one criticism about your presentation, but that single negative comment becomes all you can think about. Overgeneralization transforms single incidents into never-ending patterns. You bomb one job interview and conclude, "I'll never get hired anywhere," despite previous successes. Catastrophizing takes current situations and mentally escalates them to worst-case scenarios. Your partner doesn't text back for an hour, and suddenly you're convinced they're either dead or having an affair. Mind reading assumes you know what others are thinking without evidence. Your friend seems quiet, and you immediately know they're angry with you, rather than considering they might be tired or preoccupied. Breaking free from these distortions requires becoming aware of them in real time. The ABC Thought Log is a powerful tool for this. Identify the activating event, what happened, examine your beliefs about it, your interpretation, and note the consequences, how you felt and acted as a result. Then challenge those beliefs with evidence and create alternative interpretations that are more balanced. For example, if your activating event is, "My boss frowned during my presentation," your belief might be, "She hated it and thinks I'm incompetent." The consequence? Intense anxiety and avoiding your boss. But when you challenge this thought, you might realize she frowns when concentrating, she prays specific points afterward, and she's assigned you important projects previously, all evidence contradicting your interpretation. With practice, this process becomes more automatic. You'll develop the ability to catch distorted thoughts before they trigger the emotional cascade, creating space between stimulus and response, space where you can choose how to react rather than being driven by automatic anxiety. For many anxiety sufferers, the physical symptoms are the most distressing part of the experience. Your body becomes a betrayal machine. Heart pounding, hands shaking, stomach churning, chest tightening. These sensations can be so overwhelming that they trigger additional anxiety, creating a vicious cycle that culminates in full-blown panic attacks. What's happening physiologically is fascinating. Your sympathetic nervous system, the fight-or-flight response, floods your body with stress hormones like adrenaline and cortisol. Blood rushes to your major muscle groups, your digestive system temporarily shuts down, and your breathing becomes rapid and shallow to take in more oxygen. This response evolved to help you fight predators or run for your life, not to help you navigate a crowded shopping mall or sit through a meeting. Here's the crucial truth that can transform your relationship with panic. Despite how terrifying these sensations feel, they cannot harm you. A panic attack, no matter how severe, will not cause you to have a heart attack, stop breathing, or lose control of your mind. Your body simply cannot sustain that level of arousal indefinitely. Like a wave, panic always peaks and then subsides. The key to managing these physical symptoms lies in your breathing. When you're anxious, you typically breathe from your chest rather than your diaphragm, taking quick, shallow breaths that further convince your body you're in danger. The 4-7-8 breathing technique can interrupt this cycle. Inhale for 4 counts, hold for 7, and exhale for 8. This extended exhale activates your parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest response that counteracts anxiety's physical effects. What most people don't realize is that effective breathing requires practice when you're not anxious. Think of it like a basketball player practicing free throws. You wouldn't expect someone who never practices to suddenly perform under pressure. Similarly, you need to develop breathing skills during calm moments so they're available when anxiety strikes. Start with just 5 to 15 minutes of practice 3 times a week. Begin by simply noticing your natural breathing pattern, then gradually shift to the 4-7-8 technique. If you feel lightheaded, common when first practicing deep breathing, return to normal breathing briefly before trying again. Your body might resist this practice at first. You might feel bored, distracted, or convinced it's not working. This resistance is normal. It's your anxiety trying to maintain its hold. But with consistent practice, deep breathing becomes a powerful tool that can bring you down from the edge of panic and create space for your rational mind to regain control.
The way you talk to yourself matters profoundly when managing anxiety. Most anxiety sufferers have an inner critic that would make drill sergeants seem gentle by comparison. You're so stupid for feeling this way. Everyone can see how pathetic you are. You'll never get better. Sound familiar? This harsh self-talk isn't just unpleasant, it actively fuels anxiety. When you berate yourself for feeling anxious, you create a secondary layer of suffering, anxiety about having anxiety. This creates a snowball effect where your emotional distress compounds itself. The antidote? Self-compassion. This doesn't mean making excuses or letting yourself off the hook for responsibilities. It means treating yourself with the same kindness you'd offer a friend in distress. If your best friend was having a panic attack, would you tell them to just get over it or call them weak? Of course not. You'd be understanding and supportive. You deserve that same compassion from yourself. Start by recognizing when you're in self-criticism mode. Notice the language you use toward yourself and ask, would I say this to someone I care about? If not, reframe your self-talk to be more balanced and kind. Replace, I'm such a mess for feeling this way, with, it's human to struggle with anxiety and I'm doing my best to manage it. Another crucial aspect of self-compassion is allowing yourself to take breaks. Anxiety-prone people often feel guilty about doing anything that isn't directly productive or addressing their problems. This creates a relentless internal pressure that makes anxiety worse. Remember that taking breaks isn't wasting time. It's investing in your mental health and future productivity. These breaks need to be genuine recharges, not just different forms of stress. Scrolling through work emails doesn't count. Neither does checking social media if it leaves you feeling worse. Consider what truly replenishes you. Maybe it's reading fiction, taking a walk without your phone, playing with a pet, or simply sitting quietly with a cup of tea. Don't neglect the physical foundations of mental health either. Anxiety is significantly affected by sleep deprivation, dehydration, poor nutrition, and lack of movement. These basics aren't magic cures, but they create the conditions where your anxiety management strategies can work effectively. Think of them as clearing the path so you can move forward more easily. Remember that self-compassion isn't something you achieve once and check off your list. It's a daily practice of catching your harsh self-talk and choosing a kinder approach. Over time, this practice rewires your brain's default responses, making self-compassion more automatic and anxiety less overwhelming. Our always-connected digital world has created unprecedented challenges for anxiety management. Your ancestors never had to worry about work emails arriving at midnight or social media notifications creating FOMO while trying to relax. Your brain evolved for a much simpler environment, is struggling to adapt to this constant barrage of information and stimulation. Technology itself isn't inherently problematic. In fact, meditation apps, online therapy, and digital communities for anxiety sufferers can be tremendously helpful. The issue lies in how we use technology and the boundaries or lack thereof we establish around it. Consider how your day typically begins. If you're like most people, your smartphone serves as your alarm clock. Within seconds of waking, you're checking emails, scrolling through social media, or reading news headlines, often before your feet even touch the floor. This immediate immersion in information activates your stress response before you've had a chance to center yourself for the day. Throughout the day, constant notifications fragment your attention and trigger micro-doses of anxiety. Each ping represents a potential demand, criticism, or problem requiring your attention. Your nervous system remains on high alert, never fully relaxing into the present moment. For the self-employed or those in knowledge work, technology blurs the boundaries between work and personal life. When part of your job involves keeping up with industry news or maintaining a social media presence, does scrolling through Twitter count as work or leisure? Without clear delineation, anxiety flourishes in this ambiguous space. Creating technological boundaries doesn't mean becoming a digital hornet. Instead, it means taking control of how technology serves you rather than how you serve it. Start by establishing technology-free zones in your life, perhaps the first hour after waking, mealtimes, or the bedroom. Use your phone's Do Not Disturb feature strategically during times you need to focus or relax. Consider adopting a batch processing approach to communications. Rather than responding to emails and messages as they arrive, creating constant interruptions, designate specific times to check and respond to them. This allows you to be fully present for other activities without the anxiety of pending responses. Pay attention to how different technologies affect your anxiety levels. Social media, news sites, work emails, and entertainment apps each impact your mental state differently. Track your usage patterns and emotional responses to identify which digital activities leave you feeling more anxious and which leave you feeling restored. Remember that technology companies design their products to be addictive. They profit from your continued engagement, regardless of whether that engagement benefits you. Taking control of your digital life isn't just about reducing anxiety. It's about reclaiming your attention and time for what truly matters to you. Here's the counterintuitive truth about anxiety that most people miss. The more you try to avoid anxiety-provoking situations, the stronger your anxiety becomes. Avoidance provides immediate relief, but reinforces the belief that the situation is truly dangerous and that you can't cope with it. Each time you avoid, you're essentially telling your brain, "Yes, this is something to be feared." The most effective approach, backed by decades of research, is precisely the opposite: systematic exposure to the very situations that trigger your anxiety. This doesn't mean throwing yourself into your worst fear scenario immediately. Instead, it means gradually facing increasingly challenging situations while developing the skills to tolerate the discomfort they produce. Think of exposure like weight training for your emotional resilience. You wouldn't walk into a gym for the first time and try to bench press 300 pounds. You'd start with a weight you can manage, gradually increasing as your strength improves. Similarly, exposure therapy involves creating a hierarchy of anxiety-provoking situations, starting with those that cause mild discomfort and working your way up to more challenging scenarios. For someone with social anxiety, the hierarchy might look like this: making eye contact with a cashier, mild anxiety; asking a store employee a question; making small talk with a colleague; expressing a contrary opinion in a meeting; giving a presentation to a small group; speaking at a large event, highest anxiety. The key to effective exposure is staying in the situation long enough for your anxiety to naturally decrease. This typically takes 20 to 45 minutes, though it can vary. During this time, your body learns that the feared outcome doesn't occur, or if discomfort does happen, you can handle it without catastrophe. What makes exposure challenging is that it requires willingly moving toward discomfort rather than away from it. This runs counter to our natural instincts. But like a surfer learning to ride a wave rather than fighting against it, you can learn to move with your anxiety rather than struggling against it. The goal isn't to eliminate anxiety completely. That's neither possible nor desirable. Anxiety is part of the human experience and sometimes serves important functions. The goal is to develop a new relationship with anxiety where it no longer controls your choices or limits your life. Success isn't measured by never feeling anxious, but by being able to function effectively even when anxiety is present. With consistent practice, exposure works in two ways. It desensitizes you to anxiety triggers, they simply don't provoke the same level of fear over time, and it builds your confidence in your ability to handle discomfort when it arises. This combination creates a powerful foundation for lasting change. While everyone experiences anxiety, clinical anxiety disorders represent more intense, persistent patterns that significantly impact daily functioning. Understanding these distinct forms can help you identify what you're dealing with and seek appropriate support. Generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, is characterized by persistent, excessive worry about everyday matters, health, work, relationships, finances, that's difficult to control. Unlike situational anxiety that comes and goes, GAD creates a constant background hum of worry that can feel impossible to shut off. Physical symptoms often include muscle tension, fatigue, irritability, and sleep disturbances. People with GAD often describe themselves as worriers who have difficulty relaxing even when nothing is objectively wrong. Panic disorder centers around recurrent, unexpected panic attacks, intense periods of fear that peak within minutes, accompanied by physical symptoms like heart palpitations, shortness of breath, dizziness, or nausea. What distinguishes panic disorder from occasional panic attacks is the persistent fear of having another attack and the behavioral changes made to avoid them. This creates a fear of fear cycle where anxiety about having a panic attack actually triggers more attacks. Social anxiety disorder involves intense fear of social situations where you might be judged, embarrassed, or rejected. This goes beyond normal shyness. It can prevent people from forming relationships, advancing in careers, or even handling basic interactions like ordering food or answering the phone. The fear often centers around being perceived as anxious, incompetent, or otherwise flawed, creating a self-fulfilling prophecy where the anxiety about appearing anxious makes the anxiety worse. Specific phobias are intense fears of particular objects or situations, flying, heights, needles, spiders, enclosed spaces, that are out of proportion to the actual danger. When confronted with the feared stimulus, the person experiences immediate anxiety and typically goes to great lengths to avoid it, even when this avoidance significantly impacts their life. Obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, features unwanted, intrusive thoughts, obsessions, that cause anxiety, followed by repetitive behaviors or mental acts, compulsions, performed to reduce that anxiety. Common obsessions include fears of contamination, causing harm, or things not being just right, while common compulsions include excessive cleaning, checking, counting, or arranging. The person often recognizes these thoughts and behaviors as irrational but feels unable to stop them. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, develops after experiencing or witnessing a traumatic event. Symptoms include intrusive memories or flashbacks of the trauma, avoidance of trauma reminders, negative changes in thinking and mood, and heightened reactivity, being easily startled, feeling tense, and having angry outbursts. PTSD can make people feel constantly on guard, disconnected from others, or as if the trauma is still happening. While these disorders have distinct features, they often overlap and share common treatment approaches. Cognitive behavioral therapy, exposure therapy, and sometimes medication can be effective for all anxiety disorders. The key is recognizing when your anxiety has moved beyond normal stress into territory that requires additional support. Having an anxiety disorder isn't a character flaw or weakness. It's a health condition that responds to proper treatment.
One of the most frustrating aspects of living with anxiety is dealing with people who just don't get it. Well-meaning friends and family might say things like, "Just calm down. You're overthinking this," or "There's nothing to worry about." Statements that not only fail to help, but can actually make you feel worse, misunderstood, and alone. This empathy gap exists because anxiety exists on a spectrum. Everyone experiences mild anxiety occasionally, so people mistakenly believe they understand what clinical anxiety feels like. It's like someone who's had a headache thinking they understand migraine, or someone who's felt sad thinking they understand clinical depression. Without experiencing it firsthand, it's difficult to grasp how all-consuming and physically overwhelming anxiety can be. When explaining anxiety to others, concrete analogies often work better than abstract descriptions. Try comparing anxiety to that feeling of narrowly avoiding a car accident, the pounding heart, the surge of adrenaline, the tunnel vision. But explain that for you, this happens regularly without any actual danger present. or describe intrusive, anxious thoughts as being like a song stuck in your head that you can't stop playing, except instead of Baby Shark, it's everything is going to fall apart and it's all your fault. For those closest to you, consider having a deeper conversation about what helps during anxious moments. Some people need space and quiet, while others need distraction or reassurance. Being specific about what support looks like for you can prevent well-intentioned but unhelpful responses. Remember that education goes both ways. While others need to learn about anxiety, you might need to learn about their perspective too. Your anxiety can affect them, especially when it leads to canceled plans, reassurance seeking, or irritability. Acknowledging this impact doesn't mean you're to blame for your anxiety, but it opens the door to mutual understanding. When someone consistently dismisses or minimizes your anxiety despite your efforts to explain, it may be necessary to establish boundaries. This might mean not discussing your anxiety with certain people or limiting time with those who make you feel worse. This isn't about punishing them, but about protecting your mental health. For those who truly want to understand but struggle to grasp what you're experiencing, consider inviting them to join you for a therapy session, sharing articles or books about anxiety, or connecting them with resources for families and friends of people with anxiety disorders. Sometimes hearing information from a third party can help it sink in more effectively. Building this bridge of understanding takes time and patience from both sides. Not everyone will get it completely, and that's okay. Focus your energy on nurturing relationships with those who make the effort to understand you, even if they don't always get it perfectly right.
Despite the stigma that sometimes surrounds seeking help, therapy is one of the most effective tools for managing anxiety. Think of therapy not as a last resort for the severely ill, but as specialized training for your mind, similar to how you might work with a personal trainer to improve physical fitness. Cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, has the strongest research support for anxiety disorders. It focuses on identifying and changing unhelpful thought patterns and behaviors that maintain anxiety. A typical CBT session might involve reviewing situations that triggered anxiety during the week, examining the thoughts that occurred, challenging distorted thinking, and developing more balanced perspectives. Homework between sessions helps reinforce these skills in real-world settings. Acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT, takes a somewhat different approach, focusing less on changing anxious thoughts and more on changing your relationship with them. ACT teaches mindfulness skills to help you observe anxious thoughts without getting caught up in them, while clarifying your personal values so you can take meaningful action even when anxiety is present. Exposure therapy, often used within CBT, involves gradually facing feared situations in a controlled, supportive environment. This might mean someone with social anxiety practicing conversations with the therapist before trying them in real life, or someone with panic disorder deliberately inducing physical sensations, like rapid breathing, to learn they can tolerate them without catastrophe. Finding the right therapist often requires some trial and error. The therapeutic relationship, how comfortable you feel with your therapist, is actually one of the strongest predictors of successful outcomes. It's perfectly acceptable to meet with several therapists before deciding who feels like the best fit. Look for someone who specializes in anxiety, uses evidence-based approaches, and makes you feel understood rather than judged. For those considering medication, it's important to understand that psychiatric medications don't cure anxiety, but can help reduce symptoms enough for other coping strategies to work more effectively. SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and SNRIs, serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, are commonly prescribed for anxiety disorders and typically take 4 to 6 weeks to reach full effectiveness. Benzodiazepines provide faster relief but carry risks of dependence and are usually prescribed for short-term use only. If traditional therapy isn't accessible due to cost or location, consider alternatives like community mental health centers, which often offer sliding scale fees, therapy apps, online therapy platforms, or anxiety support groups. Books based on CBT principles can also provide structured self-help, especially when combined with workbooks that offer practical exercises. Remember that seeking help isn't a sign of weakness, but of courage and self-awareness. Many people struggle silently for years before reaching out, only to wish they had done so sooner. Whatever path you choose, whether traditional therapy, medication, self-help resources, or some combination, taking that first step toward getting support is often the hardest but most important part of the journey.
The path to managing anxiety isn't about dramatic transformations or overnight cures. It's about consistent, small actions that gradually change your relationship with anxiety. Think of it as learning to dance with a challenging partner rather than trying to banish them from the ballroom entirely. Start by identifying one small, specific change you can make today. Perhaps it's practicing 5 minutes of deep breathing, writing down three anxious thoughts and challenging them, or taking a technology-free lunch break. The action itself matters less than the commitment to doing something differently. Progress with anxiety isn't linear. You'll have good days and difficult days, steps forward and steps back. This natural variation isn't failure. It's part of the process. On harder days, return to basics, breathing, self-compassion, and remembering that feelings, no matter how intense, are temporary states, not permanent conditions. Finding ways to personalize your approach can make anxiety management more engaging. Some people benefit from visualizing anxiety as a separate entity. Giving it a ridiculous name or imagining it as a cartoon character can create psychological distance and reduce its power. Others find it helpful to gamify their progress. Treating exposure exercises like leveling up in a video game or earning points for using coping skills during challenging situations. Community support can be transformative, whether through formal support groups, online forums, or simply friends who understand. Sharing your experiences not only reduces isolation, but often provides practical strategies you hadn't considered. Sometimes the most valuable insights come from others who have walked similar paths. As you progress, you'll likely notice that anxiety's presence in your life changes. It may not disappear completely, and that's okay, but its influence diminishes. You'll find yourself making choices based on what matters to you rather than what feels safe. You'll recover more quickly from anxious episodes. You'll recognize the early warning signs and intervene before anxiety escalates. Remember that managing anxiety isn't just about reducing discomfort. It's about expanding your life. Each time you face a fear, use a coping skill, or show yourself compassion, you're not just fighting anxiety, you're building the life you want despite it. That's not just progress, it's courage in action. The tools and strategies in this book aren't magic bullets, but they are proven approaches that have helped countless people reclaim their lives from anxiety's grip. With practice, patience and persistence, you can develop a new relationship with anxiety, one where you're in the driver's seat, determining where your life goes, rather than letting anxiety dictate your destination.